Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education.
We've heard it many times. Small, sustainable choices, what we buy to eat and wear and clean our kitchen counters, over time, these things will add up to a healthier planet. Except maybe the math doesn't work. From KERA in Dallas, this is Think. I'm Chris Boyd. Writer Alden Wicker is founder and editor-in-chief at EcoCult. It's a sustainable lifestyle blog, and its readers can find articles on everything from living in a tiny house to non-toxic nail polish to where to buy sustainable lingerie, which, it turns out, is a thing. After all her reporting on manufacturing practices, both mainstream and sustainable, Wicker continues to choose the ethical and eco-friendly options when she can. But as she'll explain, she is no longer convinced her individual actions will have any measurable impact on how the world does business. Those kind of changes will take much more than simply voting with our dollars. Alden Wicker joins us this hour from the studios of NPR in New York. Her recent article for Quartz is called Conscious Consumerism is a Lie. Here's a better way to help save the world. You can find a link to it at think.kera.org. Alden, welcome to Think.
Thank you so much for having me.
How have you defined conscious consumerism in the reporting and writing that you do?
Conscious consumerism is a way of imbuing every purchase that you make with more thought. So instead of just thinking, this is pretty, I'm going to buy it, thinking, what is it made of? Who made it? Where did it come from? Will I be able to responsibly dispose of it when I'm done with it? So it's putting a lot of thought into every single purchasing decision that you make.
So it takes certainly more effort than just wandering through the world and buying whatever you can afford, but it's something that people have really felt good about doing.
Yeah, absolutely. I think people really like doing it because when you're feeling like your actual political vote doesn't matter, it does feel very empowering to say every time I make a purchasing decision, I'm putting more positive out into the world instead of negative. So it does feel really good and empowering, and like anything, like donating to charity or helping out a friend.
Who's in a position to make conscious consumerism a priority?
Honestly, only people who have some free time, some people who are educated, probably with a secondary degree, maybe even a PhD, because these issues with our global supply chain being what it is, these issues surrounding all of our consumer products are vastly complex. And it takes a lot of research to figure out, to even get a broad idea of whether the product you want to purchase is good or bad for the environment, or not even good for the environment, but less bad for the environment than the other terrible option that you're presented with. And it also is something that costs money. Now, I wouldn't say that it's necessarily something that has to cost more money. There's a lot of environmentally conscious things you can do that are that just involve buying less, which is great. But those other options involve more time, because if you're not buying these things, you're DIYing them and fixing and cooking your own meals, which is something that people have less and less time to do because of the way we work these days. You know, we're getting home way too late to cook a big meal for our family.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point that you make in the piece, is that sometimes the best thing to do is just fix what we used to have that could still be repaired, but it feels like the investment of time sometimes is what we don't have.
Yeah, exactly. You know, there is a really eco-friendly lifestyle. I mean, I think the most eco-friendly lifestyle, besides living in a cabin, is being a homesteader, because you're growing your own food, you're canning your food for the winter, you're cooking all your own things, you're making and mending and DIYing, but that is a full-time job. You know, you need someone else to work the job for the money, and then you stay home and you do all of these things, which in a two-income household, that's just not possible.
What kinds of products have been made available in sustainable forms recently, or at least forms that their sellers are calling sustainable?
Oh, everything, you name it. It's everything can be sustainable in some way. I'm trying to think of a product category that I've sort of haven't been able to find a sustainable version. And I really don't think there's any product category left that doesn't offer something sustainable. Yeah.
Is the goal to make all these things function just like their less sustainable counterparts, or is there a trade-off sometimes?
It depends. I think, for example, fashion, which is something I'm the most well-versed in, there's two different kinds of sustainable fashion. There's the obviously sustainable fashion. So when you're making a statement with what it looks like, that it is the more sustainable option. So you have fashion that's like sort of this, I call it like Japanese middle-aged art teacher style, where it's like very loose, like right. gray linen, which is great. And then there's the fashion that looks exactly like normal fashion, but is sustainable in some way.
Fashion is an interesting thing that you wrestle with, frankly, because the truth is, just because this year, black sweaters have 3/4 length sleeves and last year they had bell sleeves doesn't mean that my old sweater from last year isn't just as good. But if I want to stay in style, the world sort of expects me to get a new sweater.
Yeah, absolutely. And, with fast fashion being the way it is, it's almost impossible to keep up. I mean, there is the option of doing something like a capsule wardrobe, which is something I like to do just because it's easier, where you just say, I'm going to have 2 pairs of black pants. They're going to be pretty basic, so they won't go out of style. But even that's becoming obsolete because now skinny pants are over and everyone's going to wide leg pants. And I feel like in 2 years, I'm going to have to get rid of all my things that I thought were really well made that I invested in, and get rid of them because I'm going to look like a weirdo walking around in skinny pants.
So we can't wear skinny pants anymore? This is the kind of thing I don't keep up with.
It's debatable.
Okay, so you were asked to speak to the UN youth delegation about the work you do, and you made a decision that you were going to be very honest. Talk about what you told that audience.
Well, I told them that that I didn't want them to go out into the world as future leaders and think that, it's just the individual choices that matter, and that sort of browbeating consumers and doing public education campaigns on these topics is going to be the solution. It's not. If you have the power, you need to use it to make the sustainable decision the default decision instead of the harder decision. For example, I brought up Mexico. So I talked in my speech a lot about plastic water bottles because everybody knows plastic water bottles are bad for the environment. Everybody knows. It's been established. It's not debated, like climate change. And yet consumption of water bottles continues to rise. So that shows that with a very, very simple issue, we can't make a dent if we just focus on guilting consumers into doing the right thing. And I think where that comes from, that rise in consumption of water bottles, is because it's getting harder and harder to not use water bottles because they're given to you. If you go to a developing country as a tourist, you have to buy bottled water because they don't have proper water processing facilities, purification facilities. So, you can't find water fountains anymore because they've just been taken away, because when you go in a place, like, you just buy a bottle of water. So you have to think about the system and how it's encouraging bottled water consumption instead of just pointing at consumers and saying, this is all your fault.
So, in other words, maybe if we invested more in public infrastructure, had more water fountains here, and had better trustworthy water systems in the developing world, that would be
and
better.
And here in the United States, too, yeah. I would say.
Yeah, that's a very good point. I wondered if the fact that we can recycle plastic bottles makes us think, oh, we're not doing something so bad because we'll recycle this container.
That's a good point. And I think there is some truth to that. I think the bigger truth is that the fact that we are asking governments to handle our, like, local governments to handle our plastic waste and recycle it instead of asking the companies that produce the plastic waste to take responsibility for that plastic waste is the bigger problem.
So, in other words, we're subsidizing the dealing with this waste. The company isn't responsible because we say, okay, the municipal sanitation corporation will take care of it.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's incredibly unfair to both our local governments and to consumers. I mean, the famous Crying Indian ad campaign, which sort of launched this anti-littering movement, was actually created by a nonprofit that was a coalition of consumer goods companies because they wanted to say that the plastic waste that everyone was seeing everywhere wasn't their fault. It was people's fault. People make the litter. People should be able to clean it up was the message. And that's not true. These companies make the litter. They should be responsible for figuring out how to deal with this problem, not consumers, because we're just individuals. We're not experts. You know, we have other priorities. We're just trying to get by. We're trying to figure out how to live our lives. And so I really have started bristling lately when someone brings up some sort of environmental problem and they say consumers have the power. We do have the power, but not in that in the way that they're saying and making little individual choices and trying to make the right choice. It's in taking all of that energy and putting it on representatives and nonprofits who are the experts in these things and can figure out a broad scale solution.
Were you nervous about giving that speech to the extent that the content of it was likely to, you know, disturb the comfort of people who assume that they knew how things worked?
I was not nervous. And I think it was because the person that invited me to give that speech agreed with me. I mean, when he first invited me, I said, well, you know, I think I'm actually going to say this thing about conscious consumer is not working. And he was like, no, I totally agree. I think you should give that message. So I felt very supported in that message. Unfortunately, I don't think it really made through because one of the delegates stood up and asked everyone to make a personal pledge not to use water bottles anymore. And I thought, well, you completely missed the point.
I wonder how you came to this understanding. When you started, you know, EcoCult, were you a firm believer in the power of conscious consumerism in and of itself?
Oh, yes. I mean, EcoCult was created to fill a gap that I saw in sort of the blogging world where there was a lot of guilting going around. And I wanted to sort of draw people into the environmental movement by showing that it could be beautiful and it could be easily integrated into your life without having to give up a lot of our comforts or fun. And so I thought, okay, well, I'm going to be a really important part of this movement by just posting pretty pictures and giving people the information that they need to make the right choice. I still do that and I've still continued to do that. But over the past more than a year, I've started integrating in things that are a little bit smarter about, okay, if you care enough to be a sustainable tourist, you should also learn about, say, carbon tax versus cap and trade, because that will make, if we figure that out, that might address this problem of air travel. So I've been telling my readers to sort of look outside their little worldview and think about what they can do, who they can donate to, what they can learn about to be not conscious, just conscious consumers, but conscious citizens.
My guest is Alden Wicker, founder and editor-in-chief at EcoCult. You can find a link to her Quartz article, Conscious Consumerism is a Lie. Here's a better way to help save the world at think.kera.org. If you've got a question, you can call 1-800-933-5372 or you can email think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from the SMU Summer Youth Program, with hands-on workshops in game design, coding, robotics, visual arts, math, and language arts for students entering grades K through 12 at SMU's Plano campus. Online registration is available at smu.edu/summeryouth.
This is Think. I'm Chris Boyd, speaking this hour with EcoCult founder and editor-in-chief Alden Wicker. She wrote a recent article for Quartz called Conscious Consumerism is a Lie. Here's a better way to help save the world. You can join our conversation on Twitter at KERA Think, or you can call 1-800-933-5372. Alden, you found a study that discovered that carbon footprints of so-called green consumers, people who are making an effort, don't tend to be notably different from those who don't care. I was really surprised and a little bit disheartened by that, to be honest.
Yeah, it is disheartening to see that, especially when being a conscious consumer on a daily basis takes so much work.
Yeah.
How could it not be yielding results? But there are a few big decisions that you can make as a person, as a citizen, that will have a very large effect on your carbon footprint. And after that, there are diminishing returns to choosing, I don't know, which apple to buy at the grocery store. So the big decisions you can make are whether to live in the suburbs and use a car to commute to work and around everywhere, or whether to live in a densely populated city where you can walk or take public transportation. So that's a huge decision you make. Like, you know, you probably make it once. You decide which way to go. You can stop eating red meat, which has a huge effect on your carbon footprint. And then you can decide to not travel as much around the world. Other than that, those little decisions are not worth the fretting over and the hand-wringing that they get.
I would imagine the travel one is really tough for a lot of people to swallow. But the reality is that even if you buy carbon offsets, if you are riding on a jet, you are putting a lot of CO2 into the environment.
Yeah. And, you know, I've been accused, I mean, I guess rightly, by some of my readers of, you know, not really living within my ideals, because I love to travel. I love to travel. And when I travel, when I get to my destination, I try to be really thoughtful about supporting businesses that are sustainable, supporting, you know, experiences that benefit the local community. But yeah, it takes a plane to get there. And it's really hard to tell me to say that I'm going to give that up. And I'm someone who cares passionately about this. So it just goes to show that it's really hard to convince consumers to be the most sustainable version of themselves.
All right, let's go to the phones now at 1-800-933-5372. We have Allison on the line in Dallas. Hi, Allison.
Hi, Chris. Thank you for letting me on. And maybe I missed this because I'm outside working, but I have heard recently that the single biggest immediate thing one can do is become vegan, and that so many of these other things are just trivial and really don't amount to anything. But almost the minute you become vegan, you have the biggest impact on the ecosystem.
What do you know about that, Alden?
Yeah, you know, I actually have a lot of friends who are vegan. I personally am not vegan, but animal agriculture, especially red meat, has a huge effect on the environment. When you start getting down to chickens and pigs and other animals, egg laying, butter, I guess not butter because that comes from a cow, but other types of food that comes from animals, again, you see diminishing returns to giving them up. So it's pretty easy, actually, to give up red meat because there's always other options on the table. Being a vegan is a little bit harder to do, and it takes a lot of thought. You have to make sure you're getting all your nutrients. You have to live in a place where there are vegan options available. So my message would be, like, if that appeals to you and you find it healthful for you and you have the means to do it, absolutely do it. But don't feel guilty if you try it and fail or it's not something that appeals to you.
When it comes to food, you say one of the things people can do instead of, you know, going to a farm-to-table restaurant and, you know, treating yourself to a good meal there, feeling like you're doing something good for the world, spend some time. We should educate ourselves about the Farm Bill. What do we need to know about the Farm Bill?
So the Farm Bill is the single piece of legislation that comes up every year that has a huge impact on our food system. It decides who gets subsidies. It decides where, like, what we're going to do with excess food that the government buys, and what that's going to be. So the Farm Bill decides basically how we're going to grow our food, and it also decides how we're going to eat it, because it props up some types of agriculture, such as corn or dairy, and doesn't prop up other types of agriculture, like just random produce that might be really healthy. So it has a huge impact. And I'm not an expert on the Farm Bill, and I should be, but I do know that when it comes up, if you care enough to go spend a lot of money at a farm-to-table restaurant, which is great if you want really good food, but you should also think about how you can call your representatives and let them know what you think about the Farm Bill and how you would like it to change.
Another impulse we might have is to go, say, apple picking or peach picking, and we drive somewhere to an organic farm and we get stuff and we come home and we make a pie and we feel great. You say maybe save the gas and volunteer locally with an organization that's trying to work on food deserts. Explain what a food desert is.
So a food desert is an area where it's very, very difficult to get fresh food. So you might be only within walking distance of, or within a few miles of delis that, you know, have a tiny selection of apples and everything's packaged, or fast food restaurants. But it's just really hard to get good fresh food that you can bring home and cook into a healthy dinner for a cost that fits into your budget.
Do you get the sense that the producers of sustainable products understand the limitations of their efforts?
That is a good question. And I think some of them are starting to find that. You know, I was at a movie screening last night, and there was a woman there, Maxime Beda, who runs the online store and sustainable fashion brand Zadie. And she's an incredibly smart woman. And she was pressing the makers of the documentary on what legislation there is, or what organizations are working to help with water pollution in Bangladesh from the fashion industry. So she's doing the best she can to provide an alternative fashion. But I think she's very aware that it's not the only solution. Like, there has to be large scale change. And how do we contribute to that change as consumers beyond just choosing this sweater over that sweater?
Very few of us these days wear our clothing until it is literally unwearable. Usually we give it away because we don't like it anymore. We're tired of it. It has, shown a little bit of wear. People ask you about what to do in terms of recycling or donating old clothes. What have you learned about that?
So I did a piece for Newsweek last summer where I looked into this question. And the thing is that no matter where you donate your clothes, they're probably going to end up in the exact same waste stream, because Americans throw out an average of 80 pounds of clothing a year. We throw out so much clothing that even homeless shelters don't want it because there's too much of it. They want a few things that they don't get much of, like bras or raincoats. But by and large, they don't want these things. And so we can only resell 20% of what we donate. And then the rest of that is either shredded, or downcycled, or it's shipped abroad to developing countries and resold. It's debatable whether or not secondhand clothing hurts clothing industries in these countries. But people continue to ask me, oh, well, I don't want my clothing ending up in Haiti, so where do I donate it? And my answer is, donate it wherever you want. Whatever organization you think should receive the money from reselling that clothing, donate it there. But don't think it's gonna like magically find its way into the hands of a grateful low-income American, because it's not.
Is there a really good reason to environmentally seek out clothing that's manufactured in the United States?
Yes, I think there is, because clothing as it's built right now, every component of that piece of clothing and the packaging is shipped from all over the world it just goes through this huge supply chain on these ships that use crude oil. And then it finally finds its way here. And also there's the fact that the United States has incredibly strict environmental regulations that protects our waterways, whereas a lot of countries in Southeast Asia and Asia do not. So you can almost be sure that if you buy a pair of blue jeans that are made in China or Bangladesh, that you are poisoning the water there. So there is a good reason to buy clothing that's made in the United States. Unfortunately, it's not that easy because we just don't make the highest quality clothing anymore. And it's more expensive to buy. So you might get, you know, I know a purse brand that they were trying to make it in New York, and then they were like, we can't do this anymore. The quality's not there. We're not getting what we need. It's really, really expensive. We just have to outsource it to, I think they decided Vietnam. And I understand why they made that decision.
What's really interesting is that a lot of people used to associate things manufactured, particularly in parts of Asia, as being lower quality, but that's often not the case anymore.
No, it's not. I mean, they have incredible technology. A lot of high-end brands manufacture there. So when you see something that's made in China, it's really hard to know whether or not it's really, really high quality or it's really, really low quality and whether or not it hurt the environment. And that's one of my biggest arguments against this idea of it's that purchasing is a moral act, because I am incredibly well educated on this topic and I still don't know what the answer is. I still don't know. You know, I try to support different brands that I think are doing well, but there's no labeling system like USDA organic to show you that this is better than that. So it's an incredibly hard process to get a sustainable wardrobe, and I don't think anyone's entirely done it yet.
You're listening to Think. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is Alden Wicker, who is founder and editor-in-chief at EcoCult. We're talking about conscious consumerism and ways to save the planet. If you'd like to join our conversation, you can call 1-800-933-5372, or you can email think@kera.org. Jimmy in Benbrook writes, the best way to manage waste is to charge a price for the disposal of the product at the time of purchase and to enable recovery of at least part of that cost by enabling the consumer to have options of selling the waste, like cleaning the plastic bottles and selling the plastic back to a recycler. This allows the consumer to choose products with lower costs and waste disposal options. What do you think?
I think I agree with him completely. He put it perfectly.
All right. I want to talk for a minute about the ability to purchase things that cost more. As you mentioned, you know, people might need a little more time, a little more education. The truth is some of these choices are mostly available to people who also have extra disposable income.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you look, there's options for everyone. There are options for everyone. Going back to fashion, new, sustainable, ethically made fashion, it can cost $300 for a sweater. Now, hopefully that sweater will last you for 10 years because it's beautifully made, but it is going to cost you money. So you have to give up some other things. You have to decide, okay, I'm going to buy this one sweater instead of 10 sweaters. There are options for people who don't have as much income. You can buy secondhand. Like I said, there's a lot of secondhand out there, more than we can sell. So you can always find something that way. You can choose to buy from places like Levi's or H&M that are putting a lot of research into being more sustainable. It's not the perfect option, but if you do want fresh, trendy fashion that's like a little bit more affordable, you could try to do that. But again, it's putting a lot of thought into and work into building this wardrobe, which is more than what a lot of people want to do.
H&M surprises me. I guess I associated them with quick, cheap clothing, and I assumed that it was being made maybe less than responsibly. Not the case?
In a lot of ways, it is. Like I said, it's not the perfect option, but they are the largest purchaser of organic cotton in the world. They're going to their second year of giving out $1 million prize to initiatives or research that's trying to figure out how to close the loop and make clothing completely recyclable. They have other initiatives. They have a conscious collection. If you go into their store, if you just look for a green label, this is clothing that's made a little bit more sustainably. So if you really want something new or you need it now, like for me, I don't spend a lot of money on white blouses because I drop food on myself. I'm just not going to do that. So I'll go into H&M and I'll pick up some white blouses that are a little bit more affordable. And I know they have some organic cotton in them, so I don't feel as guilty about my decision.
How do you feel about much publicized efforts by companies like Walmart to save energy in their stores, to add more organic food items to their shelves? Is this sort of thing a worthy effort, or is it greenwashing? How can we tell the difference?
It's really hard to tell the difference. Sometimes I don't even know. I mean, my feelings on Walmart itself are mixed. I mean, you ask some people, and it's great that they're doing what they're doing. Other people take a more dim view of their efforts so far and think they can do more. The problem is that I think right now I truly believe that any large corporation that is going sustainable isn't doing it because they're being forced to. They're doing it because people at the top think it's the right thing to do. And they're trying to justify it to their shareholders, but it's a really hard sell because it's an uneven playing field. So these companies can invest a lot into trying to be sustainable, but consumers aren't necessarily rewarding them for that. And what would really work is instituting a cap and trade system for carbon or a carbon tax so that it's financially rewarding to be more sustainable. Because right now it's simply not. And as long as we have publicly traded companies whose main focus is on increasing shareholder value instead of thinking about how to improve the world with what they're doing, it's going to continue to be a problem.
Alden Wicker is my guest. She's editor-in-chief at EcoCult. She wrote an article recently for Quartz called Conscious Consumerism is a Lie. Here's a better way to help save the world. You can find a direct link to that piece at think.kera.org. We'll be back to our conversation in a couple of minutes. And if you'd like to join us, you can call in to 1-800-933-5372. You can email think@kera.org, or you can find us on Twitter at @KERAThink.
Funding for Think comes from the SMU Summer Youth Program with hands-on workshops in game design, coding, robotics, visual arts, math, and language arts for students entering grades K-12 at SMU's Plano campus. Online registration is available at smu.edu/summeryouth.
This is Think. I'm Chris Boyd, speaking this hour with EcoCult editor Alden Wicker. You can find a link to her Quartz article, Conscious Consumerism is a Lie, at think.kera.org, or join the conversation at 1-800-933-5372. Alden, one of the reasons I think I was drawn to your piece is this. No matter where we fall on these issues, it's sort of human nature to prefer a really a definitive answer on things. And you don't provide that because you can't honestly provide it. One of the things that you acknowledge here is that the U.S. economy is driven by consumption. If we were to cut all of our buying to just what we genuinely need, bad things would happen to the GDP.
Yeah, I mean, GDP is king, right? According to economists. There's a movement to base less of our assessment of how we're doing as a country on the GDP and more on wellness indicators, how happy we are, how healthy we are. But as long as we use GDP to figure out if we're doing things the right way, we're always – everything, every single thing is going to be geared towards having us purchase more and more and more. That's just the way it works. So you know, we can all try to remove ourselves from this system, but as long as we're in this capitalist society that's based on consumption, it's going to be a Sisyphean task to do that.
How have your readers responded to the fact that you are pretty blunt with them about, you know, some options that may be more sustainable, but about the fact that different kinds of changes are necessary to really change the direction we're moving in?
You know, the reaction has been mixed. My readers are really nice, so nobody's yelled at me yet. But, across the internet, the reaction has been mixed. Some people sort of have this relief where they're like, yes, thank you for saying this. Because if you're trying to be a conscious consumer, it gets really, really exhausting. The other reaction has been to not believe me, to say, you know, it's not true. Like, just imagine if everyone decided to be more sustainable in this way, like, we could solve the world's problems. Like, it's important what we're doing. But I feel like that saying, if unicorns were real, like, we could all, you know, do magic. I mean, it's just nobody, you're never going to convince the majority of the population to be more sustainable, as long as it's the more expensive, unadvertised, less sexy, more difficult option. It's just not going to happen. And I feel bad because I don't want to take away people's hope. So the message I'm sending is twofold, is that if you can be more sustainable, you should, because it's actually, on a personal level, it is healthier to be more sustainable because, you know, you're not using toxic products and you're being more thoughtful in a lot of different ways. However, take the energy that you would have put into trying to bring your waste down to zero and put that into being an activist, because that's one of my big regrets, is that I always said I wasn't political. And I think a lot of people felt that way. Oh, I'm not political. I'm just going to focus on what I can do every day to change the world, to be a better place. And I really wish I'd been political, because it does not matter what I do. If the EPA is dismantled, it's going to affect my drinking water.
You say, rather than, say, spending $200 on a fancy air purifier, we could donate that money to organizations or political leaders who support clean water and clean air.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think Flint is a really good example of the limits of conscious consumerism. You cannot buy your way out of Flint. You absolutely cannot. You have to, like, in order to fix that, the government has to be involved in some way. They're the ones who built the system. They're the ones who broke it. And it's going to keep breaking, because we have a really, we have an aging infrastructure in this country. And it's going to keep breaking unless our leaders, our politicians, support the very important role the EPA has in keeping our water and our air clean. I mean, I'm a New Yorker. I moved here in 2008. I actually have no conception of how dirty this city was. And I read an article recently that talked about what the city was like before the EPA existed. And it was like we were all smokers because our lungs were so black from breathing in the city air. I don't want to go back to that. But, you know, whether or not I bring a plastic bag to the grocery store has no effect on the air quality in New York.
All right, let's go back to the phones now. We have Kay on the line in Red Oak. Hello, Kay.
Hi. I'm really, really passionate about the things that you're talking about and appreciate your show. I think a lot of people think that they do have to buy the $300 sweater like you were talking about, but a lot of this is just being more aware. For instance, one of the things that I recently discovered in my research is that in the Nestle company, where people are buying huge amounts of chocolate in our country and indeed all over the world, there's slavery going on for the chocolate harvesting by people who are kept prisoner and things being done to them. There are so many ways that we can touch the supply chain and affect people with our pocketbook that don't involve $300 sweaters. Don't you agree?
Yeah, I absolutely agree. The thing is, I actually had a really similar conversation with my sister a few months ago, where she said, "Oh my gosh, I just found out that slavery is so widespread in our supply chain. Like, look at this government list of products that are made using slave labor. That government list is hundreds of items long. I mean, shrimp, clothing, anything that's beaded. So I think everyone goes through this sort of thing where they say, oh my gosh, like what I'm doing is contributing to slave labor or pollution. I'm not going to do that thing anymore. And then you discover there's another thing and another thing and another thing. Oh my gosh, everything I buy, everything you buy. And it becomes a really, really exhausting journey. And so we get sucked down into this drain of focusing on what we buy when we should be looking up and saying, well, why is it that way? And what can we do to make a huge difference all at once instead of when someone comes up to us and says, oh, I got this from Forever 21, sort of giving them the stink eye and being like, oh, because it's a losing battle. And so, you know, we have the Modern Slavery Act, which was a huge step forward in saying that, you know, companies in the U.S. cannot source from suppliers who use slavery. That was a big deal. It's a lot more effective than trying to cut slavery out of your own life by digging into the supply chain of everything that you're buying.
All right, back to the phones now at 1-800-933-5372. Laurel is calling from Dallas. Hi, Laurel.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
Alden, I love your blog. I follow it all the time. And
especially
after electing, you had that great post about things you can do and be active. And I was really inspired by that and, like, shared it with all of my friends. I feel like my question is, you kind of touched on it earlier, but we're such a consumer nation. How do we make an impact without buying things? I feel like we work so we can buy something so that we can buy more things and work again. And I work part-time in retail, so I see the cycle. I see fast fashion. And even though I believe in being sustainable and want to help the environment, I still get sucked into working in this retail culture. And you got to have this, and you got to have this. So I just want to know, how do we make an impact without buying?
Yeah, that's a really, really good question. And I think you're, first of all, don't feel like a bad person, which I think you can start to feel like a bad person because you know these things and yet you keep doing them. Know that you are fighting against a huge Goliath of advertising and basically advertising and infrastructure that puts these things in front of you all the time is the only and first option. I think the best thing to do is to choose an issue that you really care about, and focus and figure out who are the players that are making that better. So, for example, with retail, this is a little bit hard one, but I would say you could donate to Greenpeace. So Greenpeace has an amazing detox campaign where they're really forcing large fashion companies to reckon with how toxic their fashion is and how that the toxic effluent that comes from the factories they use is going into rivers and poisoning these rivers. So that's like one organization that you could donate to and know that they're going to do the work on your behalf to make it so that even if you're in the mall, like, you know that Victoria's Secret decided to detoxify their clothing. So, like, maybe you don't have to feel so guilty about buying Victoria's Secret if you really love it and it's there. So that's one way to sort of affect change in a different way. You can also think about what kind of legislative policy is out there or is possible in order to make a big change. So, for example, if you really care about food, it's learning about the Farm Bill and telling your representatives what you think about it and how you'd want it to change.
You're listening to Think. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is Alden Wicker of the site Eco Cult. She recently wrote a piece for Quartz called Conscious Consumerism is a Lie. You can join us at 800-933-5372. And that's where we find Millie on the line in Fort Worth. Hi, Millie.
Hi. I just wanted to make a comment. Usually espouse a repetitive one way or the other, and they normally don't go out as quickly as we think, particularly if they are done in organic fibers. There are four organic fibers. They are wool, cotton, silk, and linen. And oftentimes the styles are very simple and adaptable. They more or less work like a canvas. So that's just a comment I wanted to make.
Thank you for your call, Millie. I'm guessing, do you sew?
I'm sorry?
Are you a seamstress? Do you sew?
No, I teach interior design.
There you go. Okay. Any thoughts there, Alden? Anything you want to follow up on?
Yeah, I mean, these are great. You know, I could talk all day about fashion. Yeah, these are all really great fibers. They're healthier for your skin, I think. Yeah, definitely. If you can choose them over polyester, which is basically a petroleum product, eventually you might get to the point where you just don't even like feeling polyester on your skin anymore. So, they're definitely a great choice to use these types of organic natural fibers.
Is there something we can do as a culture to get over our obsession with what is new? If you walk into a store like Target and you just go to pick up, household supplies or whatever, you can pass by a department that is full of, colorful pillows. And every season tells you that you need to have something brand new. And it can be really tempting if you don't stop yourself. You start to think, oh, everything I have looks dated and therefore I'm not as cool or as hip as the person who is going in to this store or some other one and getting all brand new things.
Yeah, man, that's a $1 million question, isn't it? I think if you feel like you need something new and you gotta have it, I think we've reached the point where you could say, okay, I'm gonna get this new thing, but when I get this new thing, I'm gonna buy it from a company who pays the female artisans a living wage to make this thing so that you actually are having a direct impact on the life of someone somewhere. I think that's a really good way to sort of get your new fix, but also know that you're doing a little bit good in the world.
A thing to finish up on here is kind of a third rail topic, but it's not one that you shy away from. And that is that having kids will automatically increase our carbon footprint.
Yes, it will. And I know we're going to get hate mail for this one because I think a recent study showed that people see people who don't want kids as immoral. But I'm a child-free by choice. And that's the big thing is by choice. I would never tell someone who wants to have kids that they should not have kids to save the environment. But I would like to see a world where it's okay and it's encouraged to not just assume that you're going to have a kid, but to think about whether having a kid is the best decision for you and have the resources decide whether you want a kid. Because every person at this point, the way our society is set up, is a net drain on the environment. Some people are bigger drains than others. But if you're creating another human being, unless they pioneer a way to sequester carbon, which it's possible but unlikely, they are going to be a net drain on the environment as well. So I would not tell anyone that who's had kids or wants to have kids that they are made the morally reprehensible decision, but I would like it to be a decision instead of an assumption that one should have kids.
Alden Wicker is founder and editor-in-chief at EcoCult. She wrote a recent piece for Quartz called Conscious Consumerism is a Lie. Here's a better way to help save the world. You can find a link to at think.kera.org. Alden, thank you so much for spending this time with us.
Thank you so much. I had a great time.
Think is produced by Stephen Becker. Shelley Canavy is our technical director. Samantha Guzman is associate producer. And Jeff Whittington is executive producer. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter at KERA Think. And subscribe to the podcast and learn about upcoming shows at think.kera.org. Once again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening and have a great day.